88.3 Southern FM, and a little bit different than usual in the introductory music.
4, 3, 2, 1, top. Allumage P80 et décollage VV12 Aeolus.
Music to mark the end of the European Space Agency's Aeolus wind measuring satellite mission. And we'll have an explanation later in the show. Welcome to the Space Show, presented by members of the Space Association of Australia. Hello, I'm Andrew Rennie. On this week's The Space Show, the wind-measuring satellite Aeolus is no more. Russia puts on a sky show. Yes, a sky show for Adelaide, Melbourne and Tasmania. And first up, we'll have Space Show News. The European Space Agency's Aeolus satellite re-entered the Earth's atmosphere over Antarctica on Saturday, July the 29th. This feature from the European Space Agency describes the satellite and its mission.
My name is Tommaso Parinello. I am Italian and I've been working for the European Space Agency for more than 20 years. I am responsible for two scientific missions called Cryosat, launched in 2010, and Aeolus, launched in 2018. Well, Aeolus mission, the name says it. Aeolus was the god of wind. So Aeolus measures wind, vertical profiles of winds from 0 to 30 kilometers altitude in the atmosphere. Its main objective was, actually is, to improve weather forecast and to improve our understanding about atmospheric dynamic processes and how they also impact on climate. Because when wind is an important parameter together with humidity and temperature, and is the mean of exchanging, for example, heat and energy around the world as the currents are in the oceans. So it also has here, like for Cryosat, a climate component. Well, it definitely has been a technological success. I mean, Aeolus was designed to be the pathfinder of the future Doppler wind LIDAR missions. And the expectation on this measure, on this mission, I would say also the pressure on this mission has been enormous. The mission was designed only to last 3.5 years, but we have been able to reach almost 5 years in space, delivering important data to the scientific community and especially to the weather forecast community. And we have proved that this technology can be used also for operational use, so that we will have a follow-on laser, Aeolus 2, which will be launched at the beginning of the next. Aeolus has been designed to improve weather forecasts. So the main users are the numerical weather forecast sensors in the world, and we are proud to say that this data is now being used by them operationally. But in the last 4 years, we have proven that the data can be used also for different science, which includes also aerosol, which also includes gravity waves. Around June this year, we will declare the end of normal mission operations and we will start what we call the Aeolus Beyond phase. This phase will last 4 to 6 weeks and we will do some very interesting, important end-of-life tests, important for the scientific community, but also in preparation of ALOS 2. After this phase, we will prepare the satellite to re-enter, and this will happen probably in September or October, but that is another story.
In its final days, Romina Percy described how AOLIS would be given an assisted re-entry.
ESA's pioneering wind mission, AOLIS, is coming home. Currently falling at 1 kilometre a day, its descent is accelerating. Soon, ESA spacecraft operators will attempt to guide AOLIS's descent home in a first-of-its-kind assisted re-entry. But first, let's take a step back. AOLIS launched into orbit in August 2018 from Europe's spaceport in French Guiana and became the first satellite to measure global winds from space using a laser. Named after AOLIS, the keeper of the winds in Greek mythology, the satellite carries one of the most sophisticated instruments ever to be put into orbit. The Aladdin instrument beamed down 7 billion pulses of UV light to profile Earth's wind. Although designed as a 3-year mission, AOLIS has exceeded not only its predicted lifetime, but also all expectations. Over the past 5 years, its data has been used in major weather forecasting services worldwide. It has tracked the Hunga Tonga volcanic plume, improved the forecasting of hurricanes, followed the huge Saharan dust plume, shed a light on Earth's polar vortex, and filled the gap in weather forecasts when airplanes were grounded during COVID lockdowns. Altogether, it has brought 3.5 billion euros worth of economic benefits over its lifetime, and is hailed as one of the most successful missions ever built and flown by ESA. But now it's time for AOLIS to come home. Gravity and the grasping wisps of Earth's atmosphere, sped up by solar activity, are dragging AOLIS down from its altitude of 320 kilometers. AOLIS was never designed for a controlled re-entry, so the satellite would naturally fall back to Earth. But ESA is going above and beyond by attempting an assisted re-entry, the first of its kind. At ESA's Mission Control Center in Germany, teams have saved enough fuel to steer AOLIS during its return to Earth. Predictions on when it will re-enter become more accurate with each passing day, a lot of which depends on solar activity. Solar flares and coronal mass ejections are speeding things up. Charged particles in space weather heat up Earth's atmosphere, causing denser air below to rise, increasing the drag of the atmosphere on AOLIS. While solar activity is hard to predict, ESA is targeting the re-entry for end of July or early August, if all maneuvers are successful. Most of the satellite will burn up when it reaches an altitude of around 80 kilometers. However, several pieces of debris may reach Earth's surface. Many months of expertise have gone into planning the optimal location for re-entry, which minimizes the extremely remote possibility that falling debris poses a risk to life. Flight control team is aiming at a stretch of ocean beneath the satellite's track, a long stretch of open water as far away from land as possible. Once AOLIS reaches an altitude of 280 kilometers, an initial maneuver will begin to guide the spacecraft towards the optimal position for re-entry. Four maneuvers will then usher it down further before hours of critical final checks. Then, a final maneuver will direct AOLIS's journey home. The satellite will return in a matter of hours, the vast majority of it burning up in Earth's atmosphere. Today, satellite missions are designed according to regulations that require them to either burn up entirely or undergo a controlled re-entry at the end of their lives in orbit. This first attempt at an assisted re-entry sets a new precedent for re-entering active satellites that didn't fall under these regulations when designed. With AOLIS, ESA is paving the way for safe re-entries and responsible space. Given the rapidly increasing amount of space traffic, protecting our precious but ever-crowded orbits has never been more important.
Aeolus was in a polar orbit, that is, one that took it close to the north and south poles. The final orbit took the satellite southward across the Pacific Ocean, over the Tasman Sea, between Australia and New Zealand, and finally descending over the Southern Ocean. As it crossed the Antarctic coast, directly south of Tasmania, it began to enter the atmosphere and break up. This was on Saturday, July the 29th at 2:40 a.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time. 6 minutes later, it was all over, with any potential debris falling near the coast of Antarctica, south of South Africa. It is interesting to note that had Aeolus not re-entered on that orbit, the next would have taken it over Queensland, New South Wales, and directly over the city of Melbourne. Now, to mark the end of the Aeolus mission, the European Space Agency worked with composer Jaime Pereira to create a 28-minute woodwind piece from data that spans the lifetime of the satellite's life in orbit around the Earth. In the resulting orchestral piece, every second is a day in the life of Aeolus, with data represented by the following instruments: the piccolo, the Rayleigh top altitude, that is the tops of the clouds, the flute, the Rayleigh observation type, that is the density of clouds, the oboe was the Rayleigh reference temperature, that is the wind temperature, the clarinet number one was the Rayleigh wind velocity, which is how fast the wind was blowing, clarinet two was the Rayleigh wind reference, that is the air pressure. A bassoon or bass clarinet performed the Rayleigh bottom altitude, that is the Earth's surface. And there is an ambient synth for the validity flag of zero, that is the Aeolus downtime. Now, you can hear special events such as volcanic eruptions represented by drums, hurricanes represented by wind sound effects, and the coronavirus pandemic represented by a pulsating synth. Now, the whole work runs 28 minutes, but we're going to play about 4.5 minutes of it.
4, 3, 2, 1, top. Allumage P80 et décollage VV12 Aeolus.
Thank you.
woodwind music for European Space Agency's wind satellite, Aeolus.
You're listening to 88.3 Southern FM, the sounds of the Bayside.
As Monday night went into Tuesday morning, most Melburnians were asleep. But some people were out and about, equipped with mobile telephone cameras to record a religious experience.
What is that?
Oh, my God.
Oh my God.
Holy crap.
Oh my God.
That is tearing apart.
Well, was it God? Or was it a comet? Was it a meteor? Or was it space junk? No, it was the fiery re-entry of the third stage of a Russian Soyuz 2-1B frigate rocket, passing high over Melbourne on its way towards its final destruction southeast of Tasmania. What had happened was that on Monday, August the 7th, at 11:19 p.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time, a Soyuz 2-1B Frigate M rocket was launched from Plesetsk Cosmodrome in northern Russia. The payload aboard was GLONASS K2 number 13L, a new type of navigational satellite. And once in orbit, the Russian Ministry of Defense renamed the satellite Cosmos 2569, a series that they've been launching since 1962. The United States Space Force tracked the satellite into a 19,133 by 19,156 kilometer orbit of inclination 64.8 degrees to the equator, and it has COSPAR designation 2023-114A. Now, the 114 means that it is the 114th launch successful into orbit this year. Now, the satellite has a mass of 1.6 tons. The frigate stage is in a similar orbit. Now, before the launch, an impact zone warning was issued for the third stage of the rocket in the Western Pacific Ocean southeast of Tasmania. The third stage has a designation of RD0110. It uses kerosene fuel and liquid oxidizer. Its dry mass, that is without the fuel, is 2.7 tons. The length of the cylindrical stage is 6.7 meters and a diameter of 2.66 meters. And it was that re-entering the Earth's atmosphere that we saw here in Melbourne. I didn't see it myself. I was asleep at the time. However, now, that highlights the problem of space debris. This particular one wasn't in orbit. It was a suborbital trajectory, but debris is falling out of the sky quite often. Now, Holger Craig is the head of the Space Safety Office at the European Space Agency, and in the context of the Aeolus re-entry, which we've already described, he had these comments about debris in space.
This, I would like to give the word to Holger Craig, head of the Space Safety Office. Holger.
Good morning, everybody. From my side, I wanted to give you a bit the wider context on what we are doing here, how it adds to the safety of spaceflight and also the sustainability of our environment. Today, we do have 10,000 spacecraft in space, of which 2,000 are not functional. In terms of mass, we are speaking about 11,000 tons of on-orbit mass. And in terms of numbers of objects, we are speaking about 30,000 objects that have a size of 10 centimeter or more. And when it comes to smaller objects, 1 centimeter and larger, the number is at the order of 1 million already. Now, that is what is in space. Now let's look at what comes back on ground and re-enters. And that is about 100 tons in a year that re-enters in a natural way. So you could say there's roughly one larger re-entry event once per week. That's the situation we are in today. So for ESA, both the problem in space and on ground is a major concern. And as many of you will know, there are international guidelines that have been developed and documented, which are today, unfortunately, only partially fulfilled. So several dozens of objects, unfortunately, are stranding in space every year. And still, the majority of the objects still re-enters in a natural way and not in a controlled way. At the same time, and that's very apparent, the use of space is undergoing a revolution. So when you look back at what we are launching in these past few years, that's more than all humanity has launched in the whole history of spaceflight together in the decades before. So we are really starting to use space in these days. 2,000 objects have been launched in the last year. So this is 20-fold of what it used to be before. So we have a situation where we have a combination of an increased use of space and still insufficient technology to prevent the risks from space. And that you can see from the many natural re-entries and also from the number of objects stranding in space each year. So in response to this, ESA has taken the initiative to improve the situation for its own missions by 2030. So everything that will be developed afterwards will become what we say debris neutral. And that means clearing precious Earth orbits after the mission. That means also that after 2030, then active removal of spacecraft by dedicated vehicles would become mandatory whenever the space system was not disposed successfully by its own means. So you could say that in the future, we are aiming at rules that more or less compare to what every national park asks. So the thing that you bring in, you need to take out again after the mission. The safety on ground is also an important measure for us today. Typically, 20 to 30% of the spacecraft mass can survive the re-entry. And, atmospheric conditions, aerodynamic heating destroys the spacecraft, but 20 to 30% of the mass can survive. Although the likelihood is of a damage or an injury is very small, and so far no injury has been reported, despite of the 100 tons re-entering every year, we take this aspect very seriously, and future spacecraft will have to be designed, in particular when they're large enough to do a controlled re-entry. And that means that it will have to have a propulsion system on board that is large enough to change the orbit in a way that a target area on the ground can be safely met. Today, this is not done by spacecraft. This is done only by launcher stages. But in the future, you will expect to see that also happening for larger satellites. Now, smaller satellites, they will probably go a different route. They will see a design change. A component that have a certain likelihood to survive the re-entry can be swapped against other components that are designed for demise by using alternative materials or changing the configuration of the different subsystems on board. ESA wants to act on all these points and then gradually start to implement these technology and rules into its own guidelines.
Because Aeolus burnt up over Antarctica, it is unlikely that any debris will ever be found. That is not often the case elsewhere. Several weeks ago, parts of an Indian rocket washed up on a Western Australian beach. Last year, parts of a SpaceX Dragon spaceship came down in rural New South Wales. And in 1979, debris from the Skylab space station landed near Esperance in Western Australia. In 1972, parts of the Soviet Cosmos 482 satellite fell onto farms around Ashburton in the South Island of New Zealand. In each case, there was no great drama, although police do seem to have a fascination with checking with Geiger counters for radioactivity. Now, numerous people saw the debris, and much of it is on public display in museums or in private homes.